Welcome to Corpus Christi Book Studies, where we dive into the spiritual writings of some of the best Catholic saints and authors. My name is Rachel Pachta, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Angela Whitehouse and Kate Harmeyer. We're so glad that you're here to listen and read alongside the rest of our Corpus Christi community. Our prayer is that the fruit of your study is deeper union with Christ and openness to the work of the Holy Spirit in your soul. So whether you're a solo studier or a part of one of our small groups, thank you for joining us and welcome to Corpus Christi. Ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
We're back. We're back pretty soon, actually, after our last recording. We're finally back on track to our regular recording schedule, which is great. Kate, how was your last month or week and a half since we talked?
I know, it's really been so tight. Yeah. So how was your lunch? It's been good. Enjoying the better weather. Got to go to the beach some over Memorial Day weekend, and that's always a good thing. Like shifting into the summer mode more completely and cleaning stuff out from this past school year and putting things in for next school year. Got an entertainment or an organization unit from IKEA. Always exciting.
Oh, so, yeah.
You know, big stuff happening over here. Big stuff.
Awesome. I feel like I go to IKEA and I think, you know, this is really going to bring a new order into our home. And then they have like effectively staged that area to make me see all the possibilities of what this could do for us.
Yeah. I remember buying the garbage bag holder and being like, I have now, my life is now in order.
Yeah.
It was the thing you put the little like Walmart bags in or whatever.
Oh yes. Like the grocery. One that goes like on the inside of like a cabinet door.
Yep.
That is peak. That is peak.
And I was like, I have officially my life is ordered.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure that our homeschool classroom that's in our house is just going to be wall to wall Billy bookcases and Calax organization units at some point.
That's great. It's so good.
It is.
Just accumulate more and more books.
Rach, how you been?
Oh, good. We have been doing a lot of landscaping on our house. I spent probably like 20 hours outside last week working on this project because I'm trying to make our landscaping like we want it to be a place of beauty, but also lower maintenance. So we're doing some moves to make landscaping areas that had been higher maintenance, like lower maintenance. So we're putting down weed barriers and all of those fun things that are supposed to just block the weeds. So they don't even come up. I don't have to take them out of my mulch anymore. So that's hopefully going to help a lot. But the big awesome thing is that we're prepping to go to Honduras on mission next week. And
that's awesome.
We're really pumped about it. Yeah. We leave one week
that's
from
so
today.
Cool. And it's a full family, right?
Yep. Everyone's going.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I'm really excited. And we got the schedule for it at the beginning of this week. And we've been several times to Honduras on mission, but this was the schedule where I was like, oh man, this is going to be so good. I mean, it's always great. But it was a really exciting schedule to just see a lot of really beautiful things and ministries you're going to be able to do while there. And I'm going to get to spend time in the Missioners Mountain property and minister to that community, which I've never done. I've been to the mountain property before, but not with it being a place of mission yet. It was just a place of like they're getting it ready or building things. And so we're now able to actually have ministry out of it. And I've known that, but I haven't been there for it. So I'm really excited. We're going to actually, Amanda Green is going with us and she's also in Corpus Christi. And she and I are going to go to two of the big women's groups that are missioner led in Honduras and have a lot of ministry time there. It's really awesome. I'm really excited to kind of start to build that bridge a lot more. And the heart of our time is focusing on the love of our Father. That was really what the Holy Spirit's speaking to the community there right now. And that's a lot of the focus of like talks and testimonies we're going to be giving. And just, it's going to be so good. Having our kids there too
That's
will be fun.
awesome. That's gonna be great. We'll be praying for you. That's so
Thanks.
cool.
What about you, Ange? How's it going?
Just yeah, good. Just getting into summer mode, you know. I went on a few field trips last week. It was field trip
Ooh,
week.
yeah, it's that time of year, huh?
So we did like the aquarium. Although it was hilarious. They only gave me my child and one other for my group. And I was an official
Crazy.
chaperone. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, do you trust me? But then it was funny because it was kind of a hard kid, the other
Yeah.
one. And so I was like, oh, I understand now. Thank you.
Yeah.
but it was sweet. It was really fun. And then, yeah, botanical garden. So we just did field trips like all last week and
Nice.
field day. And it's all the fun field stuff. So we're getting ready to close up school. Next week they're finished. So it's been
Wow.
a good year.
What's the last day of school? It's like Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Wednesday. Like that's the classic last day of school. Because when I was a teacher, Chris, my husband was like, why do schools get out on like the middle of the week? And I was like, well, because teachers don't want to come in the next week and work. So it gives them time to close up shop and then peace out over the weekend. All done. Goodbye. See you next school year.
Yeah,
Oh, it's
it's so
awesome.
funny.
I love this time of
It's an
year. I love this
exciting
time of year.
time. Yep. I'm really ready for a lot of time outside. And I'm also looking forward to the laxity of the schedule and allowing us to just do more things of pleasure as a family, like have an elongated morning out. Because usually we go to mass and then we try to head right back and start school, but now we don't really have to do that. So we can, drive around and do like simple routines and have fun and go on a bike ride and just have more leisure, which is so great to, I enjoy that a lot with my girls, especially. So it's going to be great. It's
Yes, I
going to be
want more
awesome.
leisure.
Yeah.
Just the freedom of your schedule to just kind of be more spontaneous is really nice too. You get to say yes a lot more in the summer,
You do.
and that's just really fun to just kind of take their weird ideas and just kind of be like, all right, let's see if we can make that work. We got a
Okay.
couple of hours here. Let's
Let's
give
go
it a
for
go.
it. Yes. Well, this is a great second half of the book. I had commented to you all ahead of time that it was practical, awesome stuff for me. And I'm sure I'll mention throughout our discussion about what's taught to me as you guys will talk about what's taught to you guys, but it's easier to talk about. It's not as complicated and it's not as nuanced. It's very straightforward and practical. And the image that comes to my mind as we head into this discussion is we're all on a journey. We've established that there will be consolation and desolation. In our last discussion, the first half of the book, we learned about what those two things are. And now it's like, okay, these things are going to come to you. So what is this pathway going to look like? These are great rules that while everyone's life is different and everyone's journey is different, there are lasting principles of the journey that are pretty steadfast. So I think that that's a really great way to kind of take what we did last time and apply them this time. And we broke it up into a few points, and Kate was writing it down. And I thought that the way you wrote it down was great. So, Kate, what are the three elements we're going to talk about?
Okay, so if we look at it going in order with the rules that St. Ignatius put forward, the first section of what we're going to talk about is diving more into the causes of desolation and how to endure it. And that's really the numbers or rules numbers 7 through 9. And then in the next section, understanding the nature of the journey, that would be numbers 10 and 11, kind of the ebb and flow of the spiritual life. And then in the last section, looking at the enemy's tactics or attacks and how to counteract them. So, how specifically through community and taking all of our thoughts captive, we can kind of counterattack the enemy as he comes at us through his particular sort of strategies or tactics. So, we're going to start with the causes of desolation. and how to endure it.
And it's not to just start on like a down. The one thing is like, okay, and now let's talk even more about desolation. The point of this isn't just continue to dwell on that state, but the reason why it's important that we address that and why it's important to talk about it, I think probably if I don't know the page count, but it does seem that desolation is spoken about more in the rules than consolation. And I think the reason is because it's really important for us to understand it because it is the primary mode of attack. Also, another thing I wanted to mention before we get really into the causes, I think it's good to be mindful of the fact that everybody's mental and emotional makeup is unique to them and temperaments too, like the way God made you, choleric or phlegmatic or, what are the other two? Sanguine and melancholic, right? So those are important to keep in mind. One thing I know that my husband and I really learned in our earlier 20s was that there's a lot of value in the formation that God can give us through the help of others and through the help of those who are really healthy and wise and, oftentimes well studied in the emotional and mental makeup of the human person. And so that's definitely something to consider. So when we talk about these causes of desolation, I just want to make sure that people aren't under the impression that we're just washing away any importance of clinical depression or clinical anxiety, because those can also be things that are not necessarily a spiritual cause. So I just want to put that out there. Some people might not agree with me, but I think the church would agree with me. And so I think the
That's a good
prevailing,
side to be on.
yeah.
That's a good one.
And I don't think that that's at all what he's getting at, but I do think that it's good to just make that nuance there. That makes sense.
I agree.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
And as
So,
we look more, sorry, at desolation, and you look at, we actually, it was kind of in last section, but I liked starting with number seven, where it talks about how can I adjust my thinking while in desolation in order to better overcome it. And my big takeaway from that section, as we kind of like look at the causes of it, was that the Lord's nearness and love and grace is not actually reduced when we're in desolation. It's just our experience of it. We're not experiencing it as normally or as acutely or as strongly as we do in times of consolation. It's not actually a fact that the Lord is less present to us or the Lord's grace is less accessible to us, but it is that our experience of it is such. And there can be a lot of causes to that, obviously, that are both spiritual and then maybe emotional or chemical or something else. So do we want to go into the three causes next? Do we want to dive into those?
All right, Angela, you want to do the first reason?
All righty, to help us see that we are in spiritual danger.
All right. So I definitely have been in places of desolation before because I was in spiritual danger. When I filled my mind and my soul with, honestly, like the food of the culture that inevitably put me in a place of being further from the Lord and of having less peace and of eventually getting into a really desolate place. So I think that that's really, honestly, the desolation of choice. We can choose our way into desolation. It's definitely possible. I loved the scripture verse down at the bottom. I know your works. You are neither cold nor hot. And then down at the bottom, underlined, therefore I counsel you to buy from me gold refined by fire, that you may be rich, and white garments to clothe you, and to keep the shame of your nakedness from being seen, and salve to anoint your eyes that you may see. Those whom I love, I reprove and chasten, to be zealous and repent. There's no mincing words in that one. We're called to live in a radical way because we are radically following Christ. And if we choose to kind of do both, it's going to lead to desolation.
That lukewarm faith, like that almost like as you were talking about the food of the culture, I can have one toe over here and one toe over here, and it'll be okay as long as I'm evened out. That lukewarmness is actually almost like an apathy or I want to say like a numbing agent sometimes used by the enemy, I think, to kind of just keep us from like the signals from like going off too strongly, you know what I mean? So that we would pay attention. That lukewarm kind of middle gray space is a really lethal one. At the end of that section there on 71, right in the middle of the last paragraph of the first reason, I underlined, and I thought this was a really good reminder that desolation is always an invitation to healing. It's an exposing of a place where we need to invite the Lord to have his way.
I think one way to keep in mind too is that original, I feel like at the very beginning of the book, I know there was a moment when he asked a really good question. Okay, it's on page 10. Have you been drawn to any false remedies on your quest for peace and healing? If so, which ones? What has been the result? I think that that is a really good way to think about what are these things that I'm seeking to have fulfillment from or entertainment from or whatever. I don't know if you guys have examples of ways that you examine this in your lives or like just whether or not you're bringing on desolation yourself or something. But what I've noticed is when I'm looking back and I'm thinking like, man, I really don't have peace, and I'm sitting down and thinking through it. Sometimes I'll also go to what is the media I'm putting in? How much time have I spent on Instagram? Like I'm on Instagram. What am I looking at? Because it's a danger pit in terms of spending a lot of time on there because they're just going to get you clickbait, 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 and that can go downhill so fast, you know? What are the message tones? Is it a message of sarcasm? Is it a message of something that brings comparison? For me, a big one is I love interior design, but it's not necessarily healthy for me to be looking at a bunch of project ideas. As simple as that may sound, but that's a distraction for me from my present moment because I'm not doing that right. And there's also those kinds of things of like what's bringing about a distraction, even if it's not inherently evil. Also, a while ago, my husband and I cut out a lot of television because we realized that a lot of shows we were watching honestly had vulgarity and sin in it. And it was like, you know what? Like, I just don't think that this is really filling my mind and my imagination with good and truth. So,
I think those are really good examples with TV, social media. I find too that even in conversation, when it's bordering on gossip or bordering on, it's like this conversation is can just kind of edging a little bit too close to like talking about others in a way that is uncomfortable and not edifying. Even in those situations, I like to just be mindful of that and like either change the subject or try to reroute where we're talking or where we're focusing on, or even idle conversation. Sometimes I find that when you are with a group of friends or just with a group of people, and it's like, what are we even actually talking about right now? Like, this isn't, not that it's gossip or not that it's this, it's just kind of like filler talk. And I love small talk. I can small talk to an ant and I would be fine. But at the same time, I don't know why ant came to mind as the animal. I think because I'm struggling with ants in my kitchen right now. Side story, I'm going to get them all. But just to be mindful of having intentional and good conversation, have it be purposeful in what we're asking our friends and how we're growing in our friendships with each other, with our spouses, and things like that too.
Yeah, I'm a person who sometimes after being, and I'm like a fake extrovert person. So I appear to be when in public, but then actually I'm exhausted the second I walk away from it. And I tend to do a lot of that replaying of conversations in my head and like how'd I do out there? Did I say something good? Did I say something wrong? And I think that that cycle, almost any form of cyclical thinking that is not raising your mind to good, beautiful, true things is a form of desolation for me. And so, whether it's the input of a social media stream where you've just kind of like binged on something and mindlessly consumed things, they weren't necessarily bad, but they weren't necessarily good. And you have that kind of like dullness to you afterwards. That's a desolation that's caused through our behaviors. Or even when you've been in these conversations, Ange, like you were talking about, and you walk away from those conversations and you feel heavier. Like that's a form of desolation that maybe comes from this sort of like input lukewarmness. And so the awareness of like, how do I feel after this sort of input from the world, right? Like, how does that make me feel afterwards? And if it's making us feel heavy, drawing us down towards the earth, a spirit of comparison, or that we're not loved or cherished or good enough or worthy. Like, if you identify those feelings looking like back, well, what were you doing right before that? Or what was in the past there that maybe this was a place where the enemy was attacking you, where you were weak, dragging you away in your time and your mental energy and kind of your spiritual, I don't know, nourishment, just dragging you away from what would draw you to the Lord, right? Not necessarily dragging you down, but dragging you away, if that makes some
Right.
sense, or maybe dragging you down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really important too that when I was reading this about desolation, I think because of my temperament, we talked about this kind of last month, but because of my temperament, like I don't naturally say like, what are the things, why am I down? What are the things that are getting me down? So I don't really have that type of thought process. But when I started to read this about desolation, and I realized that it is in these subtle interactions or subtle interior thoughts. I guess I thought desolation was a big thing. Like,
Yeah.
I am in desolation. Woe is me. I am
Yeah.
Jeremiah. Like, I think I
Yeah.
thought it was,
You're like, I haven't experienced that. Yeah.
yeah, I really did. I was like, guys, I don't know. I haven't really. I haven't experienced desolation like this. But then in this second part, what I realized was no, desolation, it can be more subtle. And oftentimes it is, because we are looking and evaluating what are these things interiorly in our souls that are so like nuanced and small until we say, like, oh, that is a form of desolation. I am feeling this, even though I didn't acknowledge, like, as you were talking, Kate, like, I have definitely felt, you feel that weight, you feel that heaviness after a conversation. And then you're thinking, why am I? But it's because it's like, that's the evaluation, that's the examination that Ignatius is calling us to. It can be subtle, but when we actually, there, it is that invitation to healing when we actually engage it.
I'm so glad you guys said that because that is, I think, the gateway to merging those two things. Some people will go to counseling and it has nothing to do with our Lord, right? And then others will just want to sit down, ask for the thing to be taken away, or only look at it at a really cursory, very shallow level spiritually. It's actually really shallow to just be like, well, let me just pray that away, right? Let me just offer that up to the Lord. Okay, I'm really struggling right now. I offer it up to the Lord and not go any deeper. That's actually not the thing to do. That's not what we're talking about here. And that's why the examine is so important, that practice of self-awareness from talking about doing the daily examine is the good. And then also the times at which we felt unrest and heaviness and that kind of desolate feeling. Okay, well, what was going on there? And what is that? And then I think that that is the gateway, that if there is something that is not going away and it is a consistent issue, that's definitely a red flag to say, well, what do I need to do then? What do you want me to do, Lord, so that I can receive a deeper healing here that maybe I can't reach on my own right now? Like maybe just by sitting here and thinking about it, I need a helpline. Like, show me, bring to me what or who it is that I need to receive this deeper healing from you. And he's going to provide, right? And I think that's kind of like the merger of that mentality.
It made me think too of going on to the second reason as you were talking, Rachel, when it says to understand the true state of our love of God. And I underlined it at the bottom of the page, desolation can be a gift of God to help us understand how much we really love him, or how much of our love is immature, narcissistic, and purely based on the gifts of consolation. And exactly what you were saying, where we can easily brush it off and say, like, oh, I'm just gonna offer this small thing to the Lord. Or it's almost this way in which we have to say, like, Lord, how much do I really love you that I'm gonna go here with you? That I'm gonna take on this kind of, it's kind of ugly and painful to walk through the process of healing. And so to kind of have to take out those layers and begin to purify our intentions and our thoughts, like, that is difficult work. It's the mature Christian that does that. And even going on, I mean, I thought this prayer was just absolutely beautiful. I don't pronounce it correctly. Does anyone want to say that word?
I don't know how to say it.
I
I
feel
think
like
it's Dianu, but I don't know. I'm
that
just
would
gonna
make
pretend that
sense.
I knew is right. Yeah, but
I
yeah, trust Kate in
Dianu.
that. I feel like you always know how to pronounce the hard things, but it would have been enough. It really struck me. It was really powerful to read through that Old Testament slash his kind of New Testament reading on that. but it would have been enough. It was just so beautiful.
At the very end of that second reason on page 74, at the end of that beautiful poem, where it says, "A heart of gratitude is often the antidote to desolation." That's a tool that, even in, again, Rachel, kind of bridging the gap in therapy, I've heard many times that it is very hard to feel both worry and anxiety and gratitude at the same time. And it's a coping mechanism to kind of turn to present gratitude instead of an away from anxiety can be very fruitful for people. And I think that's incredibly true in the spiritual life as well. And that's why I really love and should do more of what I know is fruitful in my spiritual life to journal. It is a testimony to how good the Lord has been in your life, even if you're not feeling it currently, like a testimony of his faithfulness to you. And so I thought that prayer was really beautiful to kind of keep bringing to mind all the things the Lord has done for you, even if you're not feeling it right now, and that it is an immature or false love if it ceases in the moment that you stop feeling consolation.
He makes a really good point at the beginning of this second reason that our tendency is to judge ourselves in light of what we desire to be true rather than what is actually true. I totally understand that. I have done that a million times, you know, trying to really see it's unnatural. Everyone is going to want to be defensive in our broken nature. We're going to want to defend our perception of ourselves as much as we can and really hold on to that as much as we can. But the best place to put it is not at our hands, but in the hands of our Father, and not take control of it, but to give control of that over to Him so that we really can see and be willing to see the areas of ourselves that are, you know, desolation comes from sin, right? So really, what areas, Lord, have I been resistant to you? Have I hurt others? Have I been deceived by myself, you know, in my own pride? I'm willing to be corrected and I'm willing to be healed in these areas of pain. It's a hard step to take, but it's really mature, you know, like when a kid finally admits, you know, it's like when you have a toddler, they go through this phase where they won't admit they did the thing that was wrong, even though it's so obvious they did the thing that was wrong, because they really want to believe they did not do that. And it's this funny little phase, and it's really hard for them to like admit wrong. And I think that that is the biggest thing, not to just go through and like accuse yourselves of sins. That's not where we're going at, but a willingness to be exposed in the Lord for us, not our perception of others acting upon me, or who am I to others, or who am I to you, but really, Lord, speak into the areas that you desire for me to be set free from sin and healed. And because that is the one area like I can give over to you. And so I give all of that over to you.
Which transitions beautifully into the third reason
Yeah.
is to really remind us that He is the source of all that is good in us, to get us out of that mentality of I can do this on my own if I merely try hard enough. It said here, the only thing any living soul has ever earned on their own is hell. And that He is the source of all good. He is the source of all consolation, and to realize our utter dependence on Him.
Desolation is a bitter antidote to this dangerous temptation to see ourselves as a captain of our ship and master of our own destiny. So I think that that's a really good way to view, like, okay, well, I'm in this place. Here's the three reasons why I could be in this place. Let me take this to prayer, like journal down these things that are the thoughts that are rooted in desolation that are coming to my mind, what's been going on around me. And then sit with that in prayer. Lord, take this deeper, deeper and deeper into my interior. Those are good questions he has at the end too. So I would recommend praying with those questions on 74 and 75, because that could be a really good guide to that journaling time. You know, I know I'm gonna take that down again for sure.
If we move to kind of the second topic that we were going to talk about today, was to understand the journey and kind of the ebb and flow of the spiritual life. I look at 77 as we look kind of in rule number 10 now. It said, some people live with a constantly disordered perspective of the future, as if it will always be rosy, or that life will, in general, be easy at some point. And that is so dead on for me. And I think specifically, Rachel, maybe because you're talking about toddlers, and as a mother, you go through a variety of stages with your kids. And I know, at least for me, I was always really looking forward to the next one when I thought that things would be easier. Once they can talk and communicate a little bit better, then that things will be easier. Once they can nap, or once they stop napping, or once this next thing happens, everything will be easier. And I think in the spiritual life in general and practical life, we sometimes deceive ourselves into thinking that if we can just get out of this time period where things are hard, then we'll just constantly be on an upward sort of trajectory. Things will continue to get easier and better as long as we love the Lord, right? Understanding that it is normal and it is actually the pattern of a mature spiritual life for there to be time periods of desolation and time periods of consolation, and then again periods of desolation, and that cycle is not purely linear.
I think it was a great statement that he made on 78, where he said, "So our expectations should be that we will constantly move through this process of testing and purification." And like you were saying, Kate, like we are going to have those things, but I think the key in it is the expectation of it. It's kind of like the classic thing when we are prepared for something and it's like, okay, these are my expectations of this. I remember thinking as a first-time parent, like it's gonna go this way. And then of course it didn't. And now as like a mom of four, I'm like, it's gonna be crazy. And of course it is. And it's just like a matter of changing the expectation of what this park date is gonna look like, kind of thing. But how that is just so true with the spiritual life. If we just set up our expectations of Lord, like I know that I am in this period of consolation right now, but there will be desolation. It just kind of helps to put that into perspective. He also said, rest when we are in consolation with a peaceful preparation and acceptance of the desolation to come, within which he will give us strength when we enter into that battle. And just being able to remind ourselves too that to enjoy in gratitude those moments of consolation, those moments in our spiritual life when the Lord is speaking to us, when we have the Holy Spirit moving, when we're at peace. Those are all such times where we can just rest and thank the Lord for them.
And know too that you're in a period of consolation and then you go to desolation, and it might not necessarily be like I've done something wrong. Like you're going through those three reasons and you're examining it. It's really good to know these tools, because then it's not like you're spun into confusion. You know, like it's like, I'm in a period of consolation. Now I'm in a period of desolation. Lord, what is it here that you're inviting me into? Well, maybe it's an area of even deeper healing. You didn't know that there was a layer there, but now you know. And or maybe he's trying to teach you something about his faithfulness in the midst of silence. There could be so many things going on. And so it's great to know about what consolation and desolation are and the causes of them and the fruit of them, so that we can accept, okay, this is going to be the ebb and flow, just like you were talking about, not to repeat that again, but those two things paired together are really valuable.
Yeah, it concludes right there saying we can look to the future knowing that there will be valleys, but they have a purpose, not to crush us, but to heal us. And so looking at the future, understanding hard things will come, hard feelings will come, desolation will come, but that there's a purpose for it. And again, uniting it to his will is what enables us to really weather those periods of time, knowing that once we're on the other side of them, consolation will return and he'll be in both places. Again, the difference is not that his grace is not and love isn't there, it's our experience of it.
Where he talks about the difference between reacting and responding. That's
That's an
so,
11,
I
yeah.
loved that. And I thought, man, that is so good and valuable for exactly what we're talking about, like doing your examine, but almost throughout the day, having the examine mindset throughout the day too, of okay, I'm having this feeling of anger. Well, feelings of anger aren't bad, but what's causing this feeling of anger? And the desire to lash out at this person. Well, the desire to lash out at the person, maybe that could be going in the wrong direction. So then what's going on here? Oh, let me just take a pause and see what's the deeper thing. What is the deeper thing?
I thought of the example in my own life, for example, when somebody says something to you, and it could be in a text message or even just in person, but you didn't read it quite correctly, or it was like, did they mean it like that? How you perceived it, and you're like, that's so rude, or what? And then, and I feel like my initial reaction is to be like, wait, what do they mean when they said, you know, and I always take it negatively.
Yeah.
And then when I start to actually allow the Lord to work in my life, and I say, like, Lord, how can I just not even be bothered by this or let this become something that I cycle through in my head? How can I just allow this not to be that, to almost like allow my initial reaction to be changed so that it is then like a, okay, I'm not going to let this become me being
Yeah.
emotional or out of control. But I mean, it's done in anger. It can be done. I feel like I do it a lot with my kids, like just my initial reaction to something. And so it was just kind of a neat example too, to kind of think like, how is this? He says his growing self-awareness is also a powerful antidote to falling into sin or even getting into situations that regularly result in sin. And this is called avoiding the near occasion of sin. We
Right.
talk about that near
Yeah.
occasion of sin all the time. It's in our, you know, it's in the prayer to
Yeah.
avoid this near occasion of sin, but it's a growing self-awareness. And it's so powerful when we actually do that.
Well, that transitions well for me from what we said our second topic would be to what our third is to acknowledge, to be aware of the way that the enemy works and attacks. And frequently it is to lie and to isolate. And
Yeah.
so, even in the misinterpretation of a text or the automatic assumption of negativity or rudeness or whatever, aggression, whatever it could be, you know, that right there is isolating. It's pulling you away from this person with whom you're having an interaction, right? And it's immediately sowing, if not lie, negativity. He uses that example of like a fortress, like almost, of course, Ignatius having a background as a soldier, knowing the field of battle and the strategies of battle, that we are engaged in a spiritual war instead of a physical one, but the tactics are much the same for the enemy, where, you know, he's going to send out his emissaries or his spies to look and see where we're most vulnerable, to try every door, to look in every window, and to see the ones that are the easiest to break through, or the walls that are the easiest to climb over, and to attack specifically there, and through lies and through isolation. And so therefore, to counteract that tactic, our approach should be to move towards unity and relationship, and to fight with the truth.
Yeah.
Right. And specifically, when you were talking about that section where it's about gradually almost lengthening the distance between a stimulus and our response to that stimulus, that is such a wonderful tool for community life, right? And for our role within community life, to kind of learn to practice that pause
Yeah.
and to notice in ourselves the Lord's functional grace when we're able to do that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think sometimes, like, we're advancing or we're growing in maturity and we're not even like aware of it. We're not even seeing, oh my gosh, like, I used to fly off the handle at something like this. I used to immediately have this knee-jerk reaction or a very defensive reaction or emotional response when someone would come to me with X, Y, or Z situation. And now, as I accept the Lord's will and accept the things that come that are less than, I don't know, good feeling, as also being permitted by the Lord for my sanctification, and that it wouldn't be permitted if it weren't for my sanctification. If I can have that trust in the Lord, I can start to kind of almost elongate the time between and the distance between the level of the stimulus and the level of my reaction, if that makes some sense. If the enemy's tactic is to lie and isolate, then our aggressive defense has to be to move towards community and truth. And I really loved the section where he talks about seeking the advice and consultation and revealing our spiritual sort of status and struggles and joys to holy friends.
I thought as you were talking to Kate, I thought that is so beautiful when that is done in friendship. When we are able to, we kind of say like call each other out, but we call each other on to a different understanding of holiness. And it's hard to do, but the line that I kept thinking of was on page 89. It's rule 13. It's the first sentence. He says, likewise, he conducts himself as a, so it's talking about the evil one, the devil. He conducts himself as a false lover in wishing to remain secret and not be revealed. And I thought in community, the opposite of that is that what we do is not kept in secret, but we actually sometimes have to reveal to one another when we are not being holy or when we are not striving for the Lord. And that's really hard to do in a friendship. We do it within our vocation of marriage, or as a single person, we do it within good friendships, good holy friendships, but it's calling out to another person, hey, I'm noticing this within you. And I'm like revealing this to you, and ask the Lord to work in that situation where the Holy Spirit will reveal to each other, like, okay, this is not good. This is not holy.
Yeah.
But yeah, the secrecy of things, or things that are kept under instead of bringing them to light.
It's been so liberating for me when I've had something going on and I've brought it up to my husband. You know, a lot of times he can help me see a little more clearly than I, obviously much more clearly than I can see myself, because we're together every day. And we didn't always do that in our marriage, but as we started to and growing in that, that became tremendously helpful in our communion with one another. And then also it leaves very little room for attack within our marriage, and also with just my own spiritual like journey with the Lord. Like, I've just noticed that it's a really powerful weapon of exposing everything to my husband. And then also I have found when I'm able to bring up something that is really weighing me down to a friend, something that I'm, you know what, I got this thought running through my head of that I am blah, 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 or that, that, gosh, I was in a great conversation a few weeks ago talking about someone's, this person witnessed to me in this, like she was sharing with me about some struggles in faith. And it was almost like just by saying it out loud, I could see her and just like take a breath, like, oh, I got it out, you know, in the open. And we were talking about how good it is to just have it in the open, because usually when it's in the open, it goes away pretty quickly, right? So that was, this is a must, definitely a must. Yeah.
Well, and it says, I think he even said, like, turn the lights on.
Yeah.
Exclamation point, right? And help one another do that. That's why holy friendships, and if our vocation is marriage, your spouse become this person that helps you turn the lights on. And there's this level of trust in those relationships where you know the intention of the other is only for good. And so if they bring something up to you that is hard to hear, they would never do that unless it was for good. And so if you can trust one another that you're both heading towards the same direction together, towards the good, then you can hear some hard things, because it would only be permitted for the sake of the growth of both of you. And so, you know, those holy friendships, and I feel like both of you are that. I'm very blessed to have you both in my life, that I know that if I come to you with something, if I say, gosh, I am just in such a funk right now, I cannot pull myself out of this, I'm worried about this, 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 and this, you'll both be the type of women that will say, well, let's think about that, like, and ask some questions that will point you to the places you need to turn the lights on. It isn't often that I come to someone and they're like, well, here's what's going on. I've just been waiting for you to come, because I know what you've been doing is X, Y, and Z, and what you've been thinking is A, B, and C, and what you needed to do is that. Like, that's never, to me, been the experience. It's more been the people that you can go to that can say, it sounds like you're feeling this way, what do you think about this? Or, or has this been going on, that really can ask you the questions, almost just kind of turn on the little lights that help you see where your footing is off. You can kind of get on a place where you leave those, even if it was a hard conversation about things that you're doing that maybe you shouldn't be doing, as opposed to the conversations we talked about earlier that were about nothing and made you feel heavy and cycling in your mind.
Yeah,
those difference. Conversations of a much more significant, potentially like hard to hear thing, you walk away from them with your head up enough that you know the hard thing you need to do next, and you're determined to do it. And that is a consolation. Like, that right there, that's a difference between desolation and consolation for me.
That's so good.
That's so
perfectly
good.
Said.
Yeah.
Praise the Lord for holy friendships. Thanks, ladies, for this time. This was so useful and such a quick read. So it's something you could just go back to over and over again, you know?
Yeah, it was awesome.
I also wanted to discuss our next book, which is going to be really great. It is St. Catherine of Siena, Mystic of Fire, Preacher of Freedom. I think probably one of my favorite books. I say that a lot, but really I only have like five favorite books and of like spiritual readings. And this one is definitely one of them. I took it on a retreat, like a silent retreat that I had a few years ago when it first came out. And man, I feel like I was texting it, like pages, like taking pictures of pages and texting it out to people. It's definitely not like an easy Father Jacques Philippe read, but it's one of those that you can sink your teeth into and go pretty deep. And I think it addresses the pop culture psychology really well. And additionally, the just incredible fire, St. Catherine of Siena, just the freedom in which she walked. Oh, so good. So I'm real excited for us to go through that together. But until next time. All right. God bless.
Cor Christi is a women's ministry of the Missioners of Christ, a Catholic missionary community. To learn more about our missioners community, visit our website at www.missionersofchrist.org.